You're listening to The Takeaway from WNYC and PRI Public Radio International in collaboration with The New York Times and WGBH Boston Public Radio.
I'm ready to barbecue and eat outside. Also, make s'mores. They are my favorite late snack, says this tweet from Portland, Oregon. While AC is ready to be eating cherry tomatoes straight off the vine and warm from the sun with a touch of dirt flavor. Sentiments all sent to us by you folks using the hashtag SummerTakeBack. A few more people are using the hashtag World Cup to tweet about the upcoming Soccer World Cup tournament in Brazil. It kicks off on June 12th in Sao Paulo. 32 teams will compete, including hometown favorite Brazil, a country that has long been culturally identified with an obsession with soccer. It's now spent roughly $11 billion on preparations for the World Cup, including $4 billion alone for the creation of 12 new stadiums. That has become controversial and has led to rioting and protests by people outraged over the profligate spending on sports facilities while the poor get nothing or are forced to relocate. Dave Zirin is a sports editor for The Nation and author of Brazil's Dance with the Devil, The World Cup, The Olympics, and The Fight for Democracy.
If we're willing to take the lesson, I think a learning experience, not just about Brazil, not just about South America, not just about emerging economies, but also about the ways in which the Olympics and the World Cup and these mega events are used to shape emerging economies.
One argument or one lesson might be, hey, the people at the University of Chicago who designed the shock treatment that got Brazil out of debt were right. Look at the success.
Yeah, and the problem, though, with that view is that the successes in Brazil are proving to be very illusory. I mean, it's produced high growth rates. I mean, their fealty to the IMF and the World Bank, their efforts at privatization, they produced very good growth rates for a while. But at the same time, it's also created huge shortages in healthcare and in education and in basic social spending. And the thing about the World Cup is that it's exacerbated all of these concerns that regular Brazilians have because they see $15 billion spent on putting on this tournament while some very, very real pressing needs go unaddressed.
In Brazil, the government has always had a problem with legitimacy, and football, soccer, has often helped the government to find and gain legitimacy. How did that happen?
That's a great question. I mean, first of all, Brazil's only had a formal democracy for about 30 years. It's a very young democracy. And because of that, the fact that FIFA, that's the international soccer body, is coming in and bigfooting all these projects, it hits a very sensitive chord among people for the very reason that you said, because it speaks to legitimacy or lack of legitimacy of dictatorships over the course of decades. And many times those dictators, they cloak themselves in soccer as this kind of unifying force in the country. I mean, soccer was to Brazil, in many respects, what the American Revolution and the Civil War was to the United States. I say that without exaggeration or hyperbole, the kind of unifying force that gave Brazil a sense of itself as a nation. Soccer arrived in the early part of the 20th century as something that Brazilians were able to not only claim from Europe, but then remake it in an entirely different style of play that made the Europeans jealous and envious.
So Pelé is part George Washington, part Abraham Lincoln, part Joe Theismann.
Yeah, with a dash of Benedict Arnold in there too.
Right.
And that's what's so interesting and contradictory about Pelé, arguably the best athlete of the 20th century, was also someone who never shied from providing willingly legitimacy to these dictatorships over the decades and standing with Brazil's dictators and really justifying the poverty in Brazil and saying it was God's will and all of these things that eroded Pelé's popularity amongst people in the country. And so Pelé is such an interesting contradictory figure, and it says something about the conflicts now in Brazil that Pelé last week spoke out against the spending for the World Cup. Pelé never takes political stands.
How does this message and how does this tournament go down in the favelas, in the ghettos of Rio and the other cities in Brazil?
A lot of the favelas are being overrun by the military. People are being displaced. And there is a way in which the World Cup is being used to facilitate a land grab, particularly in Rio de Janeiro, where there's a real estate speculative boom happening right now. See, Brazil has some of the toughest squatter rights laws in the world. And people have built these remarkable communities over the course of decades, impoverished communities, but with a lot of pride and a lot of their own elbow grease on the hills in Rio. And these hills are valuable real estate. I mean, people, the wealth, the new wealth, they want to develop. on these hills. And the World Cup is being used as a pretext to say we need security, the favelas are dangerous, we need to actually physically either remove people from their homes at gunpoint or pay them off so they leave their homes willingly. A lot of carrot and stick right now. So in the favelas, it's not about go Brazil, yay World Cup. It's about real fears about what's going to happen to them.
Are real communities being bulldozed to make way for parking lots for rich people to park their cars?
Yeah, I have a whole chapter in the book about one community in particular that they're trying to turn the entire community that's been there for almost 100 years into a parking lot. Some estimates have as many as 250,000 people in a country of 200 million who are going to be displaced for the World Cup and the Olympics. I mean, those sort of things are just leading to this aggressive piling on of grievances that's just causing the situation to boil over.
It's a ritual of coverage of the Olympics that the host city has problems getting ready, mm-hmm. and people are worried that they're going to miss deadlines and it's not going to work. There was all kinds of horror stories told about Athens, which didn't really play out. They had a successful Olympics in Greece. But I've never heard the stories like I've heard coming out of Brazil about preparations for the Olympics. That I even talked with a Brazilian the other night who absolutely assured me that the Olympics would be taken from mm-hmm. Brazil, that's the level of chaos that it's in right now.
In our lifetimes, there has never been as open a discussion about taking away an Olympics 2 years in advance as we're seeing right now with Brazil. You really have to go back to 1968 and the demonstrations in Mexico City before you've seen this kind of protest in advance of either a World Cup or an Olympics.
We look back at the Berlin Games of Adolf Hitler mm-hmm. and see that as an obscene sort of propagandistic exercise of German nationalism. But the way you write about the Olympics and these mega events, in the history when it's written of the Olympic movement, will a lot of the games, maybe even all the games, be essentially remembered as a kind of propagandistic exercise?
I mean, if looked at through a certain historical lens, absolutely. I mean, I just had this discussion with George Vesey, one of the great legendary sports writers who has covered, you know, more Olympics than I've been alive for. And George Vesey said to me, other than 1992 in Barcelona, he has never seen an Olympics that wasn't an immoral land grab and a kind of neoliberal Trojan horse aimed at taking away really public works and transforming them magically into these just horrible pork projects.
For the aggrandizement of some political system.
Exactly.
Dave Zirin, sports editor for The Nation and author of Brazil's Dance with the Devil, the World Cup, the Olympics, and the Fight for Democracy. Thanks so much, Dave.
Thank you.